responds God acts faithfully and purposefully. But reading the story as it is arranged in the canon from Genesis 1 through Isaiah 39, Miles finds evidence only of God's impassibility, God's lack of feeling. There has been little indication or no indication before Isaiah 40, Miles says, that even as a personal God, the God of Isaac and Jacob, that the Lord had the ability or more especially the inclination to eavesdrop on the human heart, to note fears, sorrows, confusions, and so on, to be the soul's omniscient companion. But beginning with Isaiah 40, God's face changes. Something happens to bring God from the condition of this unaffected, unfeeling God to the lyric ardor that bursts upon us in 2 Isaiah when God says, "Comfort, comfort my people, speak tenderly to Jerusalem." That something, Miles says, has to do with God's unrequited love. Back to last Sunday's sermon. Has to do with God's unrequited love for Israel. The sort of love you do not get until it is gone. The kind of love that grieves your heart and causes you to cry out, to lament over what seems to be irretrievably lost. The 8th century prophet Hosea, writing 200 years before 2 Isaiah, captures the pathos of God's initial burst onto the emotional scene by casting God first as a cuckold and then as the father of an alienated child. As God's standing, God commands Hosea to marry a woman prone to unfaithfulness. They have a son whose name means God sows, a daughter whose name means not pitied, and finally another son whose name means I am not yours. You can see this relationship kind of going downhill. Then there follows the sort of rant that anyone who has been married to an unfaithful spouse has rightly uttered. A litany of the wrongs done, an imagination for what should be done in return, a spewing of anger that means to obliterate the other. That rant, it seems, is God's rant against Israel put in the mouth of Hosea. But then, as sometimes happens in abusive relationships, God tries to woo her back. Imagine speaking tenderly to her, giving her vineyards and opening a door of hope in the valley. With words I have read, believe it or not, at weddings, God says, "On that day you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me my Baal, my idol. For I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, and they shall be mentioned by name no more. I will make with you a covenant on that day, and I will take you for my wife in righteousness and justice, in steadfast love and mercy. I will take you for my wife in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord." Ironically, this book, Hosea, that first portrays God's passionate love and your life is in pieces. And you are asking me as though I were an expert. Where is God? Who is God? My instinct, given the scanty evidence, is to say that God hears, God knows, God notices, but more. To say God weeps with you. God's heart breaks with your breaking heart. God grieves and cries out with you. This is the God I know in Jesus Christ. But the witness of the old theologians begs to differ. Translated into a circumstance we can imagine, they say it is one thing to confess that God has seen and known firsthand what life is like in our prison cell. To be sure, there is a certain comfort in that confession. It is another thing, however, to know, as the early church did, that in entering that cell, God brandished the key to unlock its door and lead us out. For the latter, we need not only a fellow sufferer who understands, but a creator and redeemer, whose deity is made manifest in and through his humanity, whose power is revealed in death and resurrection. Still, I wonder, is God's power to save us from death compromised by God's feeling for creatures who must suffer and die? Or does God's feeling for us intensify God's saving purposes in human history? Miles says of the change on God's face as the exile in Babylon came to an end, that God had discovered for the first time what it is to love Israel. God takes her back, and whether or not Israel has changed when God does so, God has unmistakably changed. There is an utterly new tone in God's voice. The God who alone was faithful to Israel is the God who comes to love Israel more profoundly in the face of Israel's unfaithfulness. The fleeting feelings of their fertility gods do not avail. God alone loves Israel with a love that will not quit, even in the face of humiliation and unfaithfulness. That's what's unfathomable to us. But then, as Hosea continues, God, the spurned lover of the unfaithful beloved, turns out more truly to be the almighty, powerless father of God's rebellious child, Israel. The tenderness and pathos of God's words are almost unbearable. The images universally recognizable to every parent who has ever loved a child. I loved him. I taught him to walk. I took them up in my arms. I held them, led them with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I bent down to them and fed them. The love is not the love of a lover, but of a parent who is inextricably bound, as we said last week, to a rebellious daughter or child. In response to the child's rebellion, God punished the child harshly, perhaps out of anger. But in the aftermath of anger, the tone of God's voice utterly changed. God worries that the punishment has gone too far. My mother used to say when she spanked me, "This hurts me more than it hurts Second Isaiah says as much. Behold, I have taken from your hand the cup of staggering. The bowl of my wrath you shall drink no more. So what follows in Hosea, once he turns from the metaphor of marriage to the relationship between parent and child, is not a rant, but a lament. How can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, Israel? My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. No doubt I read the words of Hosea through the God I know in Jesus Christ. In his suffering love, we see the very heart of God. As he has compassion on the crowds, weeps at Lazarus' death, laments over Jerusalem, grieves in the Garden of Gethsemane, so I see the God who has compassion, weeps, laments, grieves, even as I behold the God who is about to unlock the key to the cell that is the grave. Whatever it was that happened between God and Israel in the null point of the exile, I cannot help but believe the heart of God was broken and God's love was kindled in such a way as to hasten love's incarnation, as to make room in God's love and God's heart for you and me. Great parent writes poetry.